So then what I'd like to do is start off with the first question around kind of the personal mission. Really, so to people who study Lean and are familiar with the literature, I think we all have a sense of why you might have written this book, but I'd love to hear kind of from your own perspective, what was the need and what was your personal mission for why this book exists at this time, from both you and Dr. Liker?
Okay, so I'm going to start first with the motivation that Jeff and I had to write the book was really twofold.
Okay.
So first of all, we spend so much of our time in really the mechanistic lean world, right?
Yep.
And both of us getting questions and hearing things really just about people talking about leaning out processes. How are we going to do this to reap short-term financial rewards, right? And that's not the purpose of the Toyota way.
Right.
So that was one thing. We were just overwhelmed by mechanistic lean. Secondly, we both got so many requests for, can you recommend a good book on lean in services? And although there are some out there, we really couldn't. So in not being able to recommend things, we decided, oh, why don't we just write one ourselves, right?
Yep.
For the deeper, you know, for the deeper purpose, I really will say, I never say that I'm a lean practitioner. I say that I'm a Toyota way practitioner.
Yep.
And the reason that I say that is that really, although, you know, Toyota production system has a variety of tools, the underpinnings, the two foundational pillars of Toyota way, respect for people and continuous improvement, right, are really the reason that we wrote the book, to bring people back to those two foundational pillars. My own personal Karen Ross and my Karen Ross consulting purpose, my own personal mission statement is help people improve the world. And when you think about that, helping people improve the world is really what the Toyota way is about, right? And think about Toyota. What they're doing is helping people through making alternate ways of mobility. I mean, their mission statement and
yep.
purpose isn't even more about making
yep.
cars, right? I think that actually, and you can take a look, I wrote a blog a couple of days ago, actually for Peace Day, 9/21, about Toyota Way being as a kind of alternative dispute resolution, right? It's
okay.
a way to bring people together to work collaboratively to solve problems for customers. Right? And when you think about it, service is actually about taking care of other people. How do we serve customers? How do we serve the people who work internally? Perfect example. Nobody wants a defect on their paycheck, right? You don't want your fabulous employees to have that problem, right? So really, helping people improve the world, though you can say that it's my own personal mission statement, I think that Jeff would agree to that. When we wrote this book, what we really want to do is refocus all of the people who are doing lean, not only for services, because now this is really taking off in services, right?
Yep.
But for people in manufacturing to really remember that the purpose of this is not only, it's not just short-term financial gain, right? It's not leaning out processes. It's not using every tool. It's not reducing headcount. It's really about making things better.
Yep. So I heard you say early in your personal mission statement, I heard you say that you prefer to use the term the Toyota way as opposed to lean necessarily. And for those who might not understand the difference, can you explain why it is that you prefer the term the Toyota way as opposed to some of the popular terminology around the world of lean?
Right. And the reason that I prefer Toyota way is because then it really does refer back to respect for people, which I say and we talk about as challenge, right, and nurture. So how do we challenge people to go beyond what they know now, right, and to develop as critical thinkers and creative problem solvers so that we solve the problems for our customers, and then how do we continuously improve? Continuously improve doesn't just mean how do we continue improve our internal processes? How do we improve live lives for our customers? How do we improve the lives of the people that work for us? How do we improve our community, right? So it has a much broader purpose. I've met many, 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 many mechanistic lean thinkers who think that we can lean out processes, we can just simply remove waste, we can divide up things, we can find specific root causes, and that we will actually make things better by doing so. I don't believe that's the spirit of the Toyota way, so I want to differentiate and have people understand what I do is actually help people improve to make things better, versus I'm not just going to come in and teach you a set of tools that's going to lean out your processes, because ultimately that's going to fail in the end. It's going to become, when that doesn't work, we're going to go on to the next flavor of the month.
Sure. So speaking of that perspective, right, so the book stresses over and over that it doesn't provide a mechanistic answer, and really that there's no such thing. And if we really want to succeed with the Toyota way, there is no recipe to just simply follow. There is no mechanistic approach that the book can provide. But in kind of connecting back to what customers might be wanting, my experience tells me that's what people want. People want, just tell me what to do and let me go do it, or show me the benchmark, or show me the best practice and I'll go implement it. So did you have any conflict as you were writing the book between writing the book that you really felt your customers might want and writing the book that you knew that they needed if they were going to succeed?
Absolutely not. I will tell you that neither Catherine nor I had any conflict about that at all. In the beginning chapters about purpose, we talk, there's a Taiichi Ono quote.
Okay.
And it's a great quote, and it says, people don't come to Toyota to work hard, right? They come to Toyota to learn to think. And what Jeff and I wanted to do, because what we see is happening, is that people are taking the mechanistic lean tools, etc., from manufacturing and saying, okay, well, how can we just plunk these things down in services so that we can lean out service processes, look for short-term financial results. And that's not the book that we wanted to write. It's our role to help the lean community learn how to think, right? And learn how to be creative. So in our writing, we need to follow, and we do follow, our own precepts of respect for people and continuous improvement. So the real Leslie Hengler, who we do talk about in the book, she actually, the very first thing she taught me was there's only one answer. When anyone asks you a question and when anyone wants help, the only answer is it depends. Every situation is different. That's why we need to go to Gemba and see for ourselves and deeply understand, right?
Yep.
So if every situation is different and the only answer is it depends, we need to learn how to think so that we can help other people learn how to think, which is the respect for people part. So we had absolutely no conflict, and there's many books out there. If you really want to learn about tools, if you need to know how to do Kanban, if you need to know, there's lots of books out there. Buy the Toyota Way Field book. It'll help you out.
Yes, yes. So I actually wanted to ask you, is the Toyota Way, so when I walk around my office or either of the offices that I'd ever been in, I see more copies of the Toyota Way Field Book than I do copies of the Toyota Way itself. And that may just be because people are close to the action and that's the kind of more usable version. But can we expect, and maybe I'm looking ahead a little bit, can we expect a Toyota Way for Service Excellence Field Book at any point?
I'll talk to Jeff about that. I'm not sure, because really I think the Toyota Way Field Book, and I know that's one of the later questions, that there's a, in thinking about how to really do Toyota Way,
yep,
in services, there's a lot of, I believe, same application. We need to be creative, but you can do things in almost the same way. I actually never worked in manufacturing, right? I only come from services, and I read the Toyota Way and the Toyota Way Field Book and all of those books, and it all translated perfectly to me. Yep.
Certa. So I'm what I'm angling at is I'm so into the book that you, the first book that you wrote, I want the sequel already.
Okay, then I'm gonna ask Jeff and we'll see what we can do for you.
Sounds great. So speaking of Jeff, so Dr. Liker wrote kind of the central model that's introduced at the beginning of the book, the 4P model, obviously, from the original Toyota way, which I believe was back in about 2004, if I'm remembering correctly. And there's a kind of a quote in the book that says, you know, over the last 12 years, we've spent a lot of time kind of refining and updating and evolving our understanding of that model. And what I'd really like to understand from you is, can you talk about some of the major adaptations that have happened to that 4P model, specifically in its application to service processes and organizations?
Sure. Well, one of the things you're going to find in the book that's different than in the original Toyota way is that a number of the sections, so the process section and the people section, are divided actually into a macro level and a micro level.
Yep.
So the macro level really talks about organizationally, leadership. On that level, what are the conditions that we need for Toyota Way? You know, what would we look to see? On the macro level, how do you organize? Do you organize around value streams? Do you organize, you know, in silos? All of those kind of things. On the micro level, you know, how do you have a team structure? And the same for processes. Okay, on the macro level, we have the large process principles like flow or pull or leveling. But down there on the level where people work, we have visual management, right? Standard work. And how do you integrate those two different layers? So a lot of times I think when Jeff wrote the Toyota way, there's a lot in the Toyota way that also does talk about tools, right, and that talks about what are you doing down there on the front line. There is some things about leadership. I think, you know, probably 5 to 10 years ago, there was a lot of talk in the lean community about why does lean fail? Well, it fails because we don't have leadership.
Yep.
And there was a whole movement. Everybody went crazy around Hoshin Kanri, right?
Yep.
So how do we get things going from the leadership level? So the pendulum kind of swung the other way. I think in this book, what we've done and what's different from the original Toyota way is to really look and say, in order for this to work, you actually need both those levels. You need leadership to set a vision and a purpose and a direction, right? So your Hoshin Kanri level, and think about the macro organizational processes for the company. And at the same time, you need all of the people who are doing the work to be aligned. How do we actually creatively put all of this together to serve our customers? Because ultimately, we are making services and products for customers, right?
Yep.
And so I think that those two things together are really a wonderful adaptation. There's also a lot of influence and discussion about Toyota Kata. So I don't know, you know, how familiar you are, the improvement Kata.
Very familiar. Yep.
Fabulous. Because that's really the way to tie your top and bottom together, right?
Yep. And I've never heard it put that way, but I completely agree with you.
Right. And figure 9.13 in the problem solving chapter, I think, is really a wonderful way to tie this all together. And if you're looking for a figure, you know, for this part of the discussion,
yep,
because it really shows how everything from top to bottom goes together and horizontally, starting, you know, with vision and how coaching, that linked coaching, ties the organization together, and then you get the linked improvements coming up. So I think that's the biggest change, and I think it will be really, really helpful for people.
I appreciate that. That's extremely insightful. So do you think we'll continue to see an evolution of the model over the next 12 years as much as we've seen in the previous 12 years?
You know, one of the things that I'm going to say that is that always just impresses me about working with Jeff, that mm-hmm. you would think that somebody, you know, you might think that somebody with so much knowledge and so much experience would think they really know everything and stop learning. He's my role model for learning. He is so busy and he's always thinking, how can I improve? What can I know more? What can I do better? Right? If Jeff Leiker, who has been doing this for so long and has taught so many people so many things, if that's the way his thinking is, I need to improve my thinking
sure.
in that way.
Right? Absolutely. It's good to know that he practices what he preaches.
Absolutely, 100%.
Good to know. So then transitioning a little bit, where I'd like to go kind of next is really focusing on the service excellence piece of the book. So I once had a mentor of mine say to me, if you want to know the difference between practicing the Toyota way in manufacturing versus service, think about the fact that no one ever has to ask a car after it's done being assembled how it enjoyed its manufacturing experience or its time on the plant floor, whereas that's a main goal of every service process, hopefully, that I've ever seen is good customer experience. So what I really want to know from you is, when it comes to applying the Toyota way, are there differences in the way that we need to think about service processes in particular that aren't necessarily applicable to your more traditional manufacturing processes?
Okay, so as I said before, I actually never worked in manufacturing,
yep.
right?
Which is a huge advantage.
Well, I actually think it's very unusual, right?
I will give you that.
However, everything I read and everything I had to learn from was all manufacturing-based.
Yep.
I never felt that I had to make an unusual translation, right? And what I think is, the Toyota way is a management system, right? So the principles of the Toyota way of respect for people and continuous improvement are a way to manage. Then our principles like flow and pull and leveling, etc., those things absolutely, I believe, can be applied across all services. Oftentimes, service people don't think so, right? They'll say, well, how can we level anything? Customers call us at all kinds of times. How can we know that? However, if you work in a call center and you actually spend some time on the floor and you look at the data, what you find out is you can actually find out roughly, oh, more customers call at Monday 9 a.m., right? Oh, fewer
yep.
customers come Friday. And then creatively, we can apply the principles. So again, we didn't write a recipe book, right?
Exactly.
You need to – so I think – first of all, I think the principles – all of those principles are unbelievably applicable. And actually, one of my favorite stories in my own work doing this was working with a call center who couldn't figure out why – they had so many abandoned calls at noon hour, right? Well,
okay.
When we actually looked, we found that, okay, well, you let half of your people, 50% of your service reps, went to lunch at noon, and the west coast of your operation, they came online at noon, right? And as soon as, if someone had a problem on a paycheck or with a benefit, the first thing they did when they got into work was call. So we could actually figure out, this is like a perfect creative load leveling
yep.
thing. Oh, don't let so many people go for lunch at that time. On Monday at noon, you know, just staff a little bit more. So you have to think about it in a creative way. On the other hand, what you're saying, of course, that the experience is very important. So here's a couple of things that I think are a little bit different and we want to focus with on services. In manufacturing, we are not making value with our customer usually in the moment, right?
Correct. Yep.
So, since we often do that in services, again, think of somebody calling into a call center. The person who answers the call is actually making value with the customer who, in general, is a supplier as well as the customer, right? Because they are supplying what needs to be made into value. So what's really important is that the customer service rep who answers the phone is able to do quick PDCA, right? Because they need to be able to solve a problem immediately. Because I assure you, what a customer does not want to ever, ever, ever hear is, I can't. From the service rep, right? No customer wants to hear that. They want to hear what you can do for them. So, in making, and that's really the basis of all customer experience, right?
Yep.
So, in my opinion, lean and services then, Toyota Weigh-In Services, so that we're actually teaching people respect for people to challenge them to become critical and creative thinkers, right? That is unbelievably even more important in services than it is in manufacturing, because you have your customer on the line while you're doing it.
Yeah, and in some ways it really increases the pace of improvement, because you can't necessarily say, well, hold on, I'm going to go think about that back at my desk. I'll get back to you when I have a solution to try.
Correct. So when we talk about improvement kata and coaching kata, it is really important that people actually have a habit and a routine. And when they have to do the fast thinking of helping a customer, right?
Yep.
They need to kick into that routine. So instead of saying, no, I'm sorry, our system doesn't do this. No, I'm sorry, you didn't pay to have this product on your service, right? That's only if you choose the, you know, more expensive package, blah, blah, blah. If we don't have service reps who can automatically be running problem solving, right, with the customer, we're going to run into trouble. So improvement kata and coaching kata to set up those habits, unbelievably important in services. Second thing that I will say I think is even more important in services, in manufacturing, you can see what you're creating going down the line, right?
Right.
In services, things are happening in people's minds and behind their computer. So the only way that you can actually really see is to have good visual management. So I would say in services, it's actually more important to have Toyota Way and to have those, you know, lean tools, because that's really going to help us see. And in helping us see, first of all, it makes us who do the service work feel like less things are happening randomly, right? Because service workers often feel like, oh, everything's random. Actually, it's probably most of it is not actually random. Now you can see it, right?
Absolutely.
And when you can see it, like my friend Joe from National Taxi Limo says, now you see it, now you do it, right?
Yep.
And so I would say those two things, way more important, in my opinion, in services than in manufacturing.
Yeah, and I think I can't underline that point strongly enough, specifically about the visual management, because in my experience working, having gone from manufacturing to service-dedicated environment, the number one piece of resistance I see from the folks that I work with is, well, I can't go to a Gemba because my Gemba is either in my head or it's within my computer, so what am I really going to see there?
Right, and I would say, absolutely, then how do we make it visual? So I have had fabulous success in, you know, call centers and payroll centers. So, okay, well, how many terminations? You know, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, you're working in a process where people are terminating people. Make a visual board. How many do you have now? How many do you have next hour? Great job for the manager to come around and go to Gemba and ask and write it on the board and see, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we can find lots of things to make better in that situation.
Sure we can. All right, so then to kind of build on the service approach, I want to talk about a little pictorial and some discussion that was early in the book around the different types of service organizations. And the book proposes a model where it basically takes four broad categories of service of services based on the degree of tangibility of the service and also the degree of customization, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
So how do the four types of services then kind of impact the way we think about implementing these Toyota Way principles, or do they have an impact?
Well, I actually think they do. And so just think about it from your own experience. Of course, I was on a plane this morning.
Okay.
When you fly on a plane, you don't take anything home. The only thing I actually have is my service experience, right? What was it like at the gate? Were the people nice to me while I was going through, you know, security and when I was at the gate? Did the plane leave on time? Did it get there, me there safely? Because that's the most important thing in flying, right? So what was my experience? All I have there is pure experience. When you go to a restaurant, that's a service. Service business as well, right?
Yep.
But when you're at a restaurant, you actually have two things. you have the whole experience of the wait staff, right, what the atmosphere of the restaurant's like, but then you also have, okay, was it a good quality product that you got to have? So in a restaurant, your service has to be fabulous and your food has to be really fabulous, right? So when we think about how we're going to improve, if we're in a service business that also, I would say, has a product, something tangible, right, we need to worry about both of those things. So I was actually at a new restaurant in my town that opened up last week, and I'm going to say the service was a little confusing. It's a fast, casual restaurant, and it's a little bit backwards. So, you know, my husband and I, we were a little, you know, we had our little stick that we had to take to the back to order the food, and we forgot to get napkins. The food was fabulous. I don't know if I would go back, though, because the service and the process was confusing. So you have to concern yourself, if you're in that kind of industry, with both product you're producing, right, and your service experience. On the plane, you have to be focused more on every single interaction of that service experience. Can I say one or the other is easier of those types? I can't, but you have to be very cognizant, right, of which kind of industry am I in and which should I focus on. The other thing I'm going to say based on this, because there's four quadrants, so we can think of something like McDonald's, which is a fast food provider,
yep,
and they're providing a very standard experience, but they're also providing a product. And then we can think of eating at a really fancy, you know, four-star restaurant where people might expect a very luxury experience. In my experience, people now, no matter who they are, expect a luxury experience for a coach price, right?
With everything they do.
If you go into a fast casual restaurant or even a McDonald's, nobody expects to see cheap plastic seats anymore, right? Everybody expects that they're going to have this fabulous experience. So what I'm going to say is I think that the Toyota way in service is unbelievably important at the moment, because right now service is a differentiator for everybody, right?
Absolutely.
So how are you going to use those principles, whether you have a product and a service experience or just the service experience, to make your whatever it is unbelievably luxury for that coach price, right?
Absolutely. Good to know. So I'm just curious, since you said it, so how much off the record consulting do you do when you have those sort of experiences out in your own personal life?
my poor husband, he just looks at me and he knows, and he just says to me, he says, you're not going to ask to speak to the manager. You really don't need to ask to speak to the manager, do you? And then he's always like, oh, I know you're going to speak to the manager. But it's funny because he's actually exactly the same way, because he was he's a professor of Asian studies, and he was going to China, and he was taking a group of students, and they were in O'Hare Airport, and he was at Wolfgang Puck. He was texting me, there is a flow problem at Wolfgang Puck, and I think this is what they could do to it. I'm like, so I text him back, oh, you could ask to speak to the manager.
Oh, that's too funny.
Yeah, there you go.
I once had a friend from high school who had owned a restaurant that I went to, and I had a bad experience at the restaurant. And I didn't speak to the manager on that date, but I happened to run into him not very much longer at a local grocery store, and it had been 15 years probably since we had talked last, and immediately I went up to him and I said, listen, Joey, I got some great ideas how to fix your restaurant. I was there, I went to the Gemba, and I started talking in all these funny Japanese words, and he goes, yeah, I'll call you, and I never did get the call back necessarily.
I know, and sometimes people just look at me like, okay, you've got to be kidding. And, you know, that's actually a problem, right? Think about it, because if you're any business now, you really should be worried about your customers who are going to go to other businesses. In 2012, 51% of people actually changed service providers because of poor quality service experience. And those people, they don't tell anybody anymore, right?
Sure.
They just look on the internet and they just find somewhere else to go, right? You can get basically the same insurance product at almost any insurance company. You can probably find pretty close to the same price. What is the thing that is going to tie people to your company? It is going to be that service, right? Because people are human beings. We want to interact actually with human beings. Nobody likes to phone up and get the long phone tree voice recording. Our message is, your business is important to us. You are important to us as a customer. If I hear that, I just hang up. I'm not that important, right?
Absolutely. And I can count myself in the 51% of folks, I think, over the last year, especially in a couple areas. We moved to a new town, and I'm very saddened. Same product, but different level of service certainly changes the whole customer experience.
Absolutely, and then customers just switch. So, really, people who are not being very careful about that service, and it isn't just the over-the-top, okay, well, what can we do it for you and throw money at you? It's that day-to-day interaction that you're going to have. If I have to, go to the bank, I need that service to be fabulous all of the time, right? If I go to a restaurant and it's inconsistent, I'm not going to go back either.
Sure.
Yeah.
Great. So I'm going to switch things up a little bit and ask you a bit of a fun thought exercise, or at least it's fun for me. I'm hoping you find it as fun. But I know one of the things people gravitate to when they talk about lean, especially folks who are just beginning their journey, is the whole concept of the seven wastes or the seven deadly wastes, or I don't know, maybe it's the eight wastes or the nine wastes these days. But if you were to kind of start over and define the seven deadly wastes of service organizations in particular, would they be the same seven that we know today? And if not, what would be the big differences?
Okay, so I'm going to say this is a fun thought exercise, and I put a lot of time and thinking into it. And as I said, I don't transfer from manufacturing,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
So I'm going to say I cannot think of a different waste, and I've spent many years reading other people's ideas, that actually doesn't fall into the seven that Taiichi Ono and Shigeo Shingo, figured out. And so sometimes people will say, well, what about meetings? Well, I think when you really look at a meeting, well, that could be over-processing. It's inventory.
Absolutely.
It's waiting. So I actually think the ones that we have are fabulous. People have problems sometimes translating and understanding them in services, but I think when we help them see that, tons of light bulbs go off, right? In services, I would say, just like manufacturing, the worst waste is overproduction. And people don't see how they're overproducing. And they're like, well, how could we overproduce? But if you're actually, doing a quote for someone months early, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're already overproducing and you've sent it to them and they may or may not want it and you've already spent your time. So I have spent years trying to figure out other ways. I cannot do it. Maybe you're more creative.
I'm not, but I also wouldn't put myself on the same playing field. And I just everything I've read has suggested that the seven translate very well, and I've not seen anything to the contrary yet. So I was just curious.
Yep. So that's my answer.
All right, you're sticking to it then.
Yeah.
Great. So then I know we're kind of running short on time. So what I really want to do is focus more on taking these principles and taking the knowledge and things that we find in the book and actually putting them to use. And so the first topic, and this is a hot topic for a lot of folks. I want to talk a little bit about kind of the consultant industry for Lean and the Toyota Way as a whole. And there are really good examples, both positively and negatively, of the use of consultants in the book. There are kind of the evil mechanistic thinking, preaching consultants, and then there are the Leslies, which are painted in a lot more positive light. So for organizations that are looking to put the book's principles into a practical use, how do we need to be thinking about finding and selecting a consultant, and how do we know which side of the coin we're getting?
Okay, so I think the very first thing is going to lead us back to our discussion on purpose. before you actually, as an organization, go out to look for a consultant to do anything, I would suggest that you look very carefully at what your purpose is, right? What is it that you are here to do to serve your customers, right? And remember, service is about other people. You're here to solve the problems of the people who purchase your service, right? What's your purpose? What is your purpose for the long term? What is the legacy you want as a company to lead, to leave for the world over the long term, right? There's many companies who've been around hundreds and hundreds of years. What do you want to do in the world? What's your vision of service excellence, right? So what I'm going to say is that when you're looking for a consultant, you need to look for a consultant that's actually going to help you as an organization define and strive for your individual specific, strive towards your purpose, right? So I actually took a group from one service company because they wanted to go and, you know, Jeff calls it in the book, I think, you know, lean tourism. They wanted to go benchmark another company, right? So we went to benchmark this other company, and they were shocked to find, because it had been the same big box consultants who taught the other company, that actually all of the slides they were showing were actually exactly the same slides, just in a different color.
Oops.
Right? So, when we think about back to purpose, if the purpose is for you to be able to develop the people who work in your company to be the creative problem solvers to satisfy your particular customer's needs, right, is that kind of consulting going to get you there? Or is it simply going to get you the short-term quarterly financial results that are going to help you today? So if you want to fulfill your purpose as an organization, you need to find a consultant who's going to understand that and really teach your people how to think, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's all about learning how to think, as Taichi Ono, our fabulous teacher, all taught us.
So the one thing I will note in my experience with consultants is they're very good at the marketing, and they're very good at the telling you what you want to hear. So is there one or two good ways to find out, maybe early on when you're engaging with the consultants, whether you're getting those that are really invested in your purpose and your long-term growth versus those that are maybe just trying to sell you on an approach?
So I would say, how many questions does the consultant ask you versus
very
how
good.
Much telling does they do to you, right? So in the book, Leslie asks all sorts of questions. I would expect that a consultant would ask if they could come to Gemba and see what you're doing, right? If they just have a prepackaged thing that they send to people, I would worry a little about that, right? So I think buyer beware, just like anybody else. And also check the record of that person, right? Or that company.
Yes.
And see, you know, talk to some of the other folks who've used them as well, I would say.
And I know I'm not the one being interviewed here, but just for the record, I will also second the buyer beware and stress that with the utmost level of importance.
Yes, buyer beware. And as a consultant myself, you know, and Jeff is a consultant as well, we were very cognizant when we wrote the book, you know, what kind of light that we're putting people in. But really, Taichi Ono gave so many wonderful things. Use your brains, not your money,
yes.
Right? So I think you really want to look for people who are going to, you understand, and who challenge you from the beginning to use your brains and not just your money, right? Because ultimately, your company should be able to benefit from the consultants, not just the consultants benefiting from your company.
Well said. So we have about 5 minutes left, so I'm going to hit you with my last question, and ironically, I hit you with this question before I finished the last chapter, so it seemed to be very relevant to kind of your last thoughts in actually writing the book. And that's, I get that the book is not necessarily a recipe and it's not a playbook, but what do you say to the person who asks, how do we take this then and just get started and just get our lean efforts off the ground, whether that's going to the Gemba or going to get my senior leadership on board? What are the critical few things that you would recommend to get started short of giving somebody the entire playbook?
Okay, so I'm going to say the best thing, which is the line that the book ends with, is start, right? Most efforts never get off the ground because they don't start. I didn't have a huge amount of training. I didn't have fancy consultants who helped me when I started. I simply was a person who was in Gemba taking care of 300 customers, and the customers were unhappy. I read what I read, and I figured out what to do in one small area, right? Start with one small problem, look at the principles in the book, and say, what do we want things to look like? If things were functioning well for our customers, what would our customers want? Oh, they want this, but we're here. What are the obstacles that are preventing us from getting there, right? And then just start working away at them. There's no reason not to start, right? If you can find a teacher to help you, you're going to benefit from having a teacher to help you, because oftentimes there's things that we don't know or we can't see in ourselves, right? And a teacher also helps with discipline, because you can practice once a month, you can practice once a week, or you can practice every day. But the important thing is really start. Is it super important to start at the top with senior leadership? Is it super important to only start at the bottom? The truth is, people start where they start. There's going to be pluses and minuses from both of those, and there's no ideal world or ideal conditions anywhere. Start, find a teacher, improve yourself, improve your understanding and learning through doing, and eventually you will improve your sphere of influence. Absolutely no problem. That's my suggestion.
I thank you for that. And so speaking of find a teacher, we're just about out of time. So how can people follow along with what you're doing and keep in touch with you, Karen?
Sure. Anybody, please feel free to reach out to me at Karen@KarenRossConsulting.com. And if you will post that and publish that for me, that's great.
Absolutely.
I publish on LinkedIn all of the time. And anybody is free to give me call. You can put my phone number up there too. It's absolutely
I might stop short of that. The most
important thing I've found, you know, that the Lean community is unbelievably generous. And so please reach out to me. Anybody's welcome to reach out to me, and I'm happy to help people improve the world, right?
Absolutely.
The more we're gonna improve the world.
Terrific. So I'm going to hit stop on the recorder real quick here.
Okay.